Peter Tomlinson. I forgot to put his name on the slot, first slide, but sorry about that. He's going to talk about his measurements that he did in a little bit. So, okay, so as the name would imply, pumpkins. I don't work on pumpkins. I'm not a vegetable person, but the guy, this guy, Carrie Rivard, is. So Carrie wrote an NRCS CIG, so it's a national CIG, Conservation Innovation Grant, with pumpkins. Actually, pumpkin, sweet corn, and snap bean in no-till systems using cover crops. So the idea being, this is only a three-year experiment, you know how these grant-funded things go, but let's see if we can measure soil health improvements for pumpkin production. So we've got replicated trials at two KSU horticulture farm locations, and we just wrapped this project up. So, which we're pretty excited about because that we did two sets of measurements per year for soils, and it's kind of been a lot of work. And then also there's demonstrations going on at commercial farms all over the state. Almost all of them are growing pumpkins. So Great Plains, so huge range in the Great Plains of precipitation gradient as also an ET gradient. So the no-till pumpkins, pumpkins are a really popular crop in Kansas. I'm sure they are everywhere with agritourism. And there's about 1,000 acres of pumpkins in production. So it's not that much, but still pretty locally important. Conventional tillage. Tillage is the norm. And there are weed control issues. There are herbicides that can be used in pumpkin production. But it's the number one question that we get when we go to any kind of pumpkin grower meeting is about the herbicides. Who's doing what and when? And it's a huge issue. With no-till, we can actually get cleaner fruit because the pumpkins are laying up on top of the residue. You can get cleaner fruit. And my understanding, again, I'm not a pumpkin person, is like if a pumpkin lays on soil, it'll get a certain color on that one side. But if it's laying up on the residue, it has a better appearance. And so that goes to marketability. So for pumpkins, there's, when looking at the yield data, there's so many different things. There's total pounds of fruit, there's percent orange versus green, marketability, so how many of them have any kind of spots on them, and they grade them out. Just like fruit is done, you know, there's like multiple different grades. So they want as many clean, perfect ones as humanly possible. So this is kind of what it looks like. We have spring cover crops and fall cover crops. This is at our location at Wichita, near Wichita. It's just flat as a pancake. This is what it would look like later. You know, the winter cover crops have grown, so you can probably see the cereal rye, and it actually headed, and we had vetches in there as well. I took out the treatment list, I realized, but you'll see it in a minute. And that's, you know, right after planting. So we roll this down. So with a roller crimper, cereal rye is rolled down, drip tape is put out there, and the pumpkins are transplanted. Most of the growers actually plant seeds for the pumpkins because they've got, you know, tons and tons of acres. In this case, these were done with transplants. And that would be, you know, maybe, okay, so these are planted in July. We want them to, you know, arrive in October. And this would be mid-season, so it hasn't completely canopied over yet. But you see there's still really, really good weed control, but the cereal rye is coming. You can kind of see greenish places here. So the weed competition is still very fierce, even with all of this residue rolled down. This would be harvesting research plots at the Olathe farm. And so this would be like September, October. And so Peter and I are soil scientists, so that's what we're going to focus on. But this would be after the second year, and I just threw up a ANOVA table. This is how many, you know, there's just not a lot of statistical differences happening yet where there's any treatment, you know, differences or treatment effects. So this is the main effect of the different treatments, one of which is conventional tillage. So I measure physical properties, so that's what I'll talk about. So mean white diameter, these are really, really large aggregates. So mean white diameter is like your grade point average. So how many A's do you get, how many B's do you get, C's do you get, you put it all together, that's your mean white diameter. So we do this by collecting a soil sample. This is just a 0 to 5 centimeter layer. And then essentially you take that, if you've seen the NRCS do the slake test where they're like, oh, look how much the conventional till falls apart in water. Same thing, we dunk these up and down. It's a it's a, you know, method. I can't remember the actual method name, but I mean it's the typical wet aggregate stability test. So the bigger the better, the larger the grade point average, essentially the mean weight diameter. And these are actually pretty huge mean weight diameter. So there's no statistical differences here, and so I can't really find any. You know, there's really nothing, no treatment differences to talk about. But I'll show you some of the treatments we have. So conventional till, winter rye, rye pea mixture, rye hairy vetch mixture, rye canola, rye vetch canola, spring oats, and spring oats and winter pea. So just these last two are the ones planted in the spring. Let's see. So that was Wichita. This is Olathe. Still no treatment differences. Numerically, though, conventional tillage is lower, and that's kind of what you would think would happen. So no-till, we've got, you know, more residues laying on the surface, so there's less crusting to, you know, break up aggregates, and also with more inputs from the cover crops of organic matter, you can build organic matter building aggregates. So, you know, numerically it's smaller, but after just that first year, essentially one whole year, no differences. Infiltration, so we measure this, and this is a funky unit. I haven't, like, converted it, but this is infiltration, number of minutes to infiltrate an inch. So in this case, a lower number is better. Low is good. And we actually quit measuring after 15 minutes. And so any of these that max out at 15, it could have been a lot longer than that. But it's interesting. There are actually, this is a significant difference. I forgot to put the p-value on that, but that's Olathe infiltration. So that one was significant. So why that particular treatment is popping out differently, we don't really know. I mean, we can't make too much out of it yet, but still, that's, it is an interesting effect. So I'm going to turn it over to Peter, and he's going to close out the talk.
So in addition to the physical aspects, we also look at some biological parameters. And what I've got presented here is microbial biomass carbon. So using the chloroform fumigation extraction method, we have an unfumigated sample that gives us the background carbon in the system, or the dissolved organic carbon. That is the blue bars. And then the red bar is the difference between the fumigated and unfumigated sample, and that gives us an indication of the size of the soil microbial community. And in keeping with the theme, there were no statistical differences here. We had a fair amount of variability between our plots, which I believe is masking it, although numerically we do see larger microbial communities where we've had cover crops. Very similar pattern with the Olathe site. Again, not a lot of difference in our, or statistically no difference in our DOC or our microbial biomass carbon, but again, under the cover crops, we are seeing a larger microbial community, numerically larger microbial community. So this is just a little bit of the pumpkin data, and this is in tons of harvested fruit per acre. And so here we've got our winter rye, our winter rye, and our hairy vetch. Where we had the, and again, there were no statistical differences between our harvested fruits. We do see some numerical differences, and so we're still working through all of this data. It does look like there is a cover crop effect, and we have learned through this project that nitrogen management is critical to successful no-till pumpkin production. I was mistaken. This is our cover crop biomass. I was mistaken there. So this is our cover crop biomass. Again, no statistical difference in the amount of cover crop biomass that was accumulated. And this is our pumpkin yield data. In tons of harvested fruit per acre. And this is an example of the importance of nitrogen management. We had a significant amount of nitrogen tie-up, we believe, with our winter rye, which did hurt our pumpkin production at the Olathe site. They were doing fertigation at the Wichita location, and so we did not see that same effect at Wichita. So preliminary conclusions, cover crop selection and management is important, getting that rye terminated before it heads so that you reduce one level of weed pressure, and then making sure that you're managing your nitrogen so that you're successful and meeting your production goals. And then weed management, having an appropriate herbicide program, having that residue mat and being able to manage that throughout the year came through. Tended a number of, we had two grower evening twilight tours at the end of the production season this year. The growers that were involved, the 16 growers that were involved with the demonstration sites, they did see some advantages. Certainly we had a very wet spring and early summer this year. There were some planting challenges, but they did see some benefit from having that residue helping to reduce splash and soil transport up onto the growing fruit, which impacts overall quality. So we're in the process of getting this project wrapped up, and it's been an interesting adventure, and certainly from an agritourism standpoint, the producers see a lot of value in having that season-long residue and being able to have people enjoy harvesting the pumpkins and not walking through a muddy field. So the producers are excited by this research and looking forward to continued work in this area. So with that, Deanna and I will be happy to take any questions.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time for questions.
You mentioned weed control. Did they use any herbicides for weed control? And if they did they have a problem with cover crop establishment then?
I know that they did use herbicide for weed control. I believe there was some pre's put down after the cover crops were rolled, and some in season, a lot of spot spraying. But I don't remember any of the producers, and certainly at the research sites, we did not have an issue with herbicide carryover. The pool of products is pretty small for pumpkin production.
So when you sprayed it, getting the herbicide through that mat was a challenge. Weren't you worried about that when you were spraying close to where the plant
was? So the question is on the herbicide application, and I will fully admit I was not involved in herbicide application, so I do know that they used the sprayers with the plastic hoods to shield the pumpkin plants, and so fairly targeted application in between the planted pumpkin rows, and so not, you know, and this was the in-season application.
I got a question. What was done after pumpkin harvest? Was there tillage done, or were we going to try to stay in no-till situation, or what was that?
So the question is, what was done post-pumpkin harvest? And we had a lot of discussions in the group about this, certainly coming from a more traditional agricultural perspective. We would view no-till as truly no-till. The vegetable industry views no-till is no-till during the production season, and so there was some light disking after harvest, and the winter cover crops were incorporated with the light disking, and then the conventional tillage was routinely tilled throughout the winter and into the spring to maintain weed control.
Way less.
that's it. We're out of questions. So thank you.